From Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, Waynesburg to Wilkes-Barre, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, from turning on the lights to starting our cars, we all consume energy every day, all day, but we'll continue to be dependable. Stephanie Caterino Wissman from the American Petroleum Institute is here to discuss the recent State of American Energy report. Beat the Streets is a wrestling program that creates a life-changing environment for at-risk youth. Joe Geiger has been writer of Beat the Streets National in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Governor Josh Shapiro's proposed state budget features an unsustainable level of spending that will trigger massive tax hikes. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity explains why on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Stephanie Caterino Wissman in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro this past week delivered his annual budget address to a joint session of the Pennsylvania legislature. The governor proposed a wide range of big dollar spending programs, offering up a $48.3 billion budget that increases spending by 7.1% over the current year. Shapiro proposes to fund his spending spree by tapping into the state's rainy day fund. He wants to spend billions more on public education, public transportation, and various social programs. Republicans immediately panned the proposed budget, arguing the spending spree is fiscally irresponsible. Budget addresses by the governor tend to be more of an exercise in political messaging than actual budget making, as typically few of the governor's spending priorities actually make it through the legislative process. The budget deadline is June 30th, a deadline the governor and lawmakers missed last year by nearly 6 months. It has been a rough couple of weeks for state government technology-wise. Human error is being blamed for the deletion of data from the State Employees Retirement System and the Pennsylvania State Police. A state Senate committee is now investigating that incident, and hackers disabled components of the state's unified court system, rendering users unable to access critical information needed for the smooth functioning of the judiciary. The IT folks are working to fix that problem. A special election will be held on Tuesday in a Bucks County legislative district that will determine the balance of power in the State House of Representatives, which is currently tied at 101-101 with that one vacancy. The seat is open due to the resignation of Representative John Galloway, who is now a magisterial district judge. The seat leans Democrat but is the most competitive of the seats, which have been filled by special election over the past year. Meanwhile, all 203 state House seats are up for election this year, as are 25 seats in the state Senate. The deadline for candidates to get on the April primary ballot is this week. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The American Petroleum Institute recently released its State of American Energy report. The report looks at the dependability of the nation's energy infrastructure and spotlights challenges to the industry. Stephanie Caterino Wissman is executive director of the American Petroleum Institute, Pennsylvania, and she joins us to discuss the report. Stephanie, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Stephanie, the American Petroleum Institute recently came out with its State of American Energy report. There's a lot we're going to drill down on here over the next 10 minutes or so, but give us the high-level overview of what the report found.
Sure. Happy to, Loman. So every year, and this has started for the last maybe almost 15 years now, API has given the state of the state on the energy industry, on the natural gas and oil industry. It always takes place in early January. And our president and CEO, Mike Summers, delivered the latest one on January 10th. And I would say that the bottom line state of the state is that while we have historic U.S. production that's stabilizing global markets, Mike talked about what it's going to take to maintain America's energy advantage. So Mike pointed out, it's like, you know, we produce more energy than any country in the world, and this benefits our economy, our national security, and is in our insurance in a volatile time. So this is our American energy advantage, and it didn't happen overnight, and it can't be sustained without the right policies coming in from Washington. And in order to maintain America's energy advantage going forward, we're going to be looking to policymakers to increase energy leasing in federal lands and waters, approve permits in a timely manner, and remove barriers to developing American energy. So our leaders are placing the American energy advantage at risk. When I say our leaders, let's talk at the top, you know, the Biden administration, they're putting our energy advantage at risk for future generations. So together, no matter if you're Republican, a Democrat, an independent, there is a better way. We can provide a better way, one that restores a bipartisan approach to energy, a strategy that increases access to resources, bolsters our infrastructure, and strengthens our security. And then, Lohman, I will say there were three core pillars that our president and CEO outlined during the State of the State address back in January. And these pillars are what's needed for a long-term energy plan to change course. So these are the three areas. Energy access is what we need. Our country's record of natural gas and oil production today is largely due to the policies from previous administrations. So what Washington can and should unite around American energy from diverse sources, so including natural gas and oil. So we are an all of the above organization. We are going to need every energy source out there in order to meet the growing energy demands, not only nationally but globally, but definitely include natural gas and oil. The second pillar has to do with national security. Geopolitical tensions highlighted the critical role of reliable energy for our national security. So short-sighted federal policies, which prioritize still developing energy systems over the proven ones, risk weakening our energy advantage. And then the third pillar has to do with infrastructure. So we need to lift the barriers to modern, innovative infrastructure development, and it is critical to meeting the long-term energy demand while accelerating our climate progress.
There have been strains on the energy grid, particularly the electric grid, in recent years here, Stephanie, and those in the Biden administration and on the environmental left are pushing to do away with coal-fired power plants, even natural gas-fired power plants, which, of course, are among the most economical and also environmentally friendly plants. Where do you see us going infrastructure-wise? I see that was a core component of this report. Where are we when it comes to the issue of increasing our electric generation capacity in this country?
It's sorely needed. There's no doubt about it. I mean, unfortunately, you talk to PJM and the folks over there, and they talk about these generation facilities that are expected to go offline, within the next few years. And where is that going to leave us in regard to reliability and security in energy? There's no doubt about it. And not only that, Lohman, we need more energy generation without a doubt from all forms, but we need more pipeline capacity. When you talk about natural gas, Pennsylvania, we are blessed with being the number two largest producing natural gas state in the country. But what good is it when you don't have the pipeline capacity available to get it where it needs to go? So we truly have a bottleneck issue when it comes to pipeline capacity here in the Appalachia region. So that's Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, particularly Pennsylvania, because we want to be able to get natural gas up to New England, who sorely needs it. We want to get it down to other points on the Atlantic and the Gulf Coast. But we can't do it unless we have more pipeline capacity. And that's why permitting reform is so critically important, not only at the federal level, but at the state level, to get these projects done in an expeditious manner.
The Biden administration a couple of weeks ago here, Stephanie, put basically a moratorium on the export of liquefied natural gas. And again, a component of the report was national security. This plays into that. It plays into economic development. I want to talk a bit about the impact of the Biden administration's pause, if you will, on exporting liquefied natural gas.
Whatever you want to call it, this isn't just about a delay or a review or about one particular project. Make no mistake, this is a political move to restrict United States liquefied natural gas, or LNG, and this is catering to the climate activists, just as the president himself clearly stated in his announcement. And this decision reverses course from the administration's own pledge back in 2022 to support our allies. I mean, this is inconsistent messaging. The president is sending mixed mixed signals when it comes to the need for producing more natural gas and getting that over to our allies abroad. And those allies, in a very unstable region right now of the world, still beholden to Russia and other very unstable nations throughout the world for their energy needs. And I know the reason given is that they wanted to pause the LNG export approvals while the Department of Energy reevaluates the non-free trade agreement permitting process. That's the excuse given, but let's call it for what it is. It is absolutely a de facto moratorium on any new or pending applications for LNG export terminals in this country.
And we have seen actually bipartisan opposition to this moratorium as well. So it's not just a Republican-Democrat thing here. Let's also talk about Governor Josh Shapiro. Governor Josh Shapiro has talked about mixed messaging, been on various sides of the environmental energy discussion. He recently gave his budget address this past week and didn't say too much about energy, did he?
Not really, which was a bit disappointing. I mean, and I've said this before, the status of Pennsylvania when it comes to producing natural gas, you know, considering that Pennsylvania is the second largest producer of natural gas in the United States and a leading energy exporter, thanks in large part to our state's robust natural gas production, we would have liked to hear more of an emphasis on energy and natural gas in his budget address. So during his verbal budget address, really glossed over the whole energy issue, which was disappointing, as I said. But as we do see in the governor's proposed budget, in the actual report and the new economic development plan that he unveiled last week, Pennsylvania produced natural gas is absolutely playing a pivotal role in helping to drive our economy and create good jobs, including attracting billions of dollars of investment in hydrogen technology in the region. So, and not only that, just to go over some more benefits of natural gas development, it generates millions of dollars annually for Pennsylvania's economy, it supports tens of thousands of jobs, and has contributed over $2.5 billion in impact tax funding for a whole host of needs, such as environmental, infrastructure, public safety, and other projects during the last decade. So, and I will go to the economic development plan real quick, too, that the governor did unveil several days ago. And, you know, this was announced prior to the budget address, and energy is considered one of the five pillars of Pennsylvania's economy under the governor's economic development plan. So that is good news that the governor recognizes the importance of energy. And we share the governor's goal of leveraging our state's natural gas resources to help accelerate economic growth. But make no mistake, you know, more needs to be done to unlock Pennsylvania's full potential. We got to make sure that we ensure our energy future. So we've got to advance comprehensive permitting reform, putting smart policies in place that support Pennsylvania energy and build out that critical infrastructure that I was talking about. So at the end of the day, while I was disappointed that there wasn't more of an emphasis in the governor's speech, we'll always look forward to working with the governor on solutions that prioritize our state's energy economy and help ensure Pennsylvania stays competitive.
The American Petroleum Institute also has begun a Lights on Energy awareness campaign. Want to just give us a little bit of information on that?
When our president and CEO gave the state of the state of the energy industry, he also highlighted API's new energy campaign, the Lights on Energy campaign. And the goal of that campaign is to educate voters and policymakers on what's at stake for America's energy future. So we're ramping up education efforts to get in front of voters, policymakers. We just want to get those fundamental truths out. So what that means is renewable sources of energy absolutely have a role to play, but natural gas and oil will be needed for decades to come. And here in our country, it's produced cleaner and safer than ever, and domestic production is critical to ensure the reliability and affordability of energy over the long term. So the solution is more energy from more sources, not fewer. So Loman, we're going to take all of these facts and truths from state to state, wanted to deepening energy conversations around those three core pillars that I talked about before, which is energy access, natural security, and American infrastructure.
Stephanie Caterino-Wissman, who is Executive Director of the American Petroleum Institute, Pennsylvania. Stephanie, tell us a bit about API. Also, where on the web can folks go if they would like to read the State of American Energy Report?
The American Petroleum Institute of Pennsylvania, we're a state affiliate office of the American Petroleum Institute based in Washington, D.C. Our office is based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And API is the only national trade organization that represents all segments of America's natural gas and oil industry. So that's from the exploration and production of the resource to the transportation of the resource, service and supply companies, and refining as well. And we have about 600 members that fit all in those different segments. And your listeners can check out more about State of the American Energy Report and all the other issues that we're tackling at the moment at api.org.
Stephanie Caterina Wissman of the American Petroleum Institute. Stephanie, always a pleasure having you with us. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me on, Loman.
Beat the Streets provides a safe and structured environment for at-risk youth through a life-changing wrestling program. Joe Geiger has been writer of Beat the Streets National in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Ben, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Ben, share with our listeners, if you will, a little bit what you would like them to hear about your organization, Beat the Streets National.
Thanks, Joe. Joe, it's great to be here, so thank you for having me on, and grateful for the opportunity to talk a bit about the work we're doing. We have such amazing, inspirational youth coming through this organization. I just feel really blessed and grateful to be a part of it, and the lives being changed every day. And we work with underserved areas, underserved urban areas across the country. Each Beat the Streets city and chapter is its own organization, and now we've grown to this national network of 11 chapters reaching over 10,000 youth every year. And we use the sport of wrestling as a vehicle to get youth on a positive path and get a caring coach in their corner and help them figure out next steps after high school, and whether that's college, trades, services, and just meet youth where they're at and help guide them through life and, you know, offer a safe place. And we do a lot of mentoring on top of that, on top of our athletic component. And a lot of people ask, like, why wrestling? And it's one of our core vehicles for impact, because it's this big metaphor for life. It's everyone's wrestling through something. I don't know how many times I hear people say, I'm wrestling through a certain issue, through a certain challenge. And the sport builds a mindset that empowers our youth to navigate and overcome some really tough circumstances. We have youth that are seeing drug deals every day, youth that are seeing shootings on their block on a regular basis. And we've had youth that have gone in and out of homelessness to graduating Ivy League schools, and just really amazing youth coming through our organization. And the lessons that are packed in the sport, and the power of a caring coach in your corner and a community and a support network, really makes a tremendous difference and helps us move this mission forward.
So what's your hook with a young person, maybe in elementary school or high school, or maybe not even in school anymore? They're down and out in the streets of an urban area, and you come along and say, go get your sneakers, you're coming with me, kind of thing. What's your hook? How do you get them in?
Youth find us for different reasons and want to be a part of our program for different reasons. Sometimes youth is just, hey, we've got a couple friends that are joined the team and want to be a part of it. Sometimes it's just they show up and say, hey, there's positive people around you, and it's a safe place, and you got people that are friendly. Sometimes kids come to us thinking that it's the WWE and they're going to be, they're like, where are the chairs? And then they find out what the sport's about. But essentially how we set up our programs and a lot of the major cities across this country. So our most established Beat the Streets organizations are in New York City and Philadelphia, Chicago, Los Angeles. We got a strong chapter in New England, Boston, Providence. We're in Cleveland and Detroit, the Bay Area, and Baltimore, and D.C., and Middle Pennsylvania, and Lancaster is building a regional model to Lancaster and Harrisburg and Reading. When we have an established chapter and an organization off the ground, we'll look at where are the high poverty, high need areas in the city, and where are there limited opportunities for youth to participate in the sport and have this type of programming available. And then we'll partner, and then we'll see where the schools are in those areas or community centers are in those areas. And then if we open up a program, and if it's a cool school-based partnership, then it's open up to every kid attending that school. If it's a community-based partnership, it's open up to any kid in that community. And then we just try to get the word out and see who shows up, and whoever shows up, we're there to help them and be a part of their journey.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio program. My guest today is Ben Ryder, the executive director of Beat the Streets National. So you go from basically nothing in 2005. That's when the Beat the Streets City was established, and now you're getting kids attending Ivy League universities. You've set this up that it's for both males and females. The boys wrestle the boys, girls wrestle the girls, that kind of thing.
Girls wrestling is the fastest growing sport in the country. We're currently serving a bit over 2,500 girls in our programs, and we anticipate that continuing to grow at an even faster rate. There are so many opportunities for girls to wrestle, and there's more and more every day. You know, there's college programs are coming off the ground at a really fast rate, so there's more opportunities for our girls to pursue this at the next level.
Share a little bit the accolades of what the Beat the Streets has accomplished. What kinds of precipices have the kids themselves, the young people themselves accomplished?
One thing that we're really proud of is we've been wrestling to one of our vehicles for impact, but the mission is so much bigger than that. You know, it's about life. And one of the things that we're really proud of is we've been great at keeping kids in school in cities where that's a very big issue. You know, some of the cities that we're in, dropout rates are a really big issue. Sometimes only 60% of kids will graduate high school. And for us with Beat the Streets Youth, it's over 98% will graduate high school. So we've been doing a good job at keeping youth engaged, giving them a reason to show up to school, having a community, a support system, and that makes a big difference in their lives. And that translates to all sorts of positive life outcomes. So we've been putting a big effort into that, and we've been doing a good job of keeping youth engaged at school and learning and growing. Now that we've been around long enough, we have youth that are coming back full circle and supporting as coaches and mentors to their younger peers, even on as staff members as well. Our director of operations, John Guevara at National, who we just promoted them recently to director position, and he was a Beat Streets kid. He was a Beat Streets Philly kid. And went on and graduated from the University of Pennsylvania and majored in sociology, went into the nonprofit world for a few years, and then came on board at the National staff. So we're really proud of that, and there's lots of examples of our youth coming back and getting plugged in some way, you know, getting plugged in as a coach, as a mentor, and that's something that we're really proud of. We want the voices of our youth shaping the future of the organization, so we want to be intentional about putting our youth in positions to lead.
Ben, for our listeners' benefit, if they want to make a contribution or volunteer, how can they find you?
Well, I think directing people to our national website, which is just beatthestreets.org, and then you will see, you know, one, there's lots that we're doing on the national front that are helping youth across the entire country. We're doing that. We do our Gear Up campaign. This year is our third year doing that, and we've been able to send out over $1 million a year to youth in need across the entire country. There's a handful of opportunities to get plugged in, but then also you'll see on our website all of our local chapters and their contact info. So if you're located near one of our local chapters, well, then that's when there's a lot more. You know, there's opportunities to volunteer in person, opportunities to be a mentor, be a coach, get plugged in, help out in any way that it takes a lot of people to build this movement. And for us to, we've seen enough where we know that this work is making a big difference in the lives of the youth that we serve.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Ben Reiter. Ben is the executive director of Beat the Streets National. Ben, thank you for being a guest on the program.
Governor Josh Shapiro has proposed a massive increase in state spending that will create a structural budget deficit and higher taxes in the future. So says Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
As the nation is financially strangled by out-of-control spending and trillions of dollars of debt, one would think that a highly ambitious governor from a swing state would tidy up his own commonwealth to separate himself from a poorly polling president's executive strategy. Unfortunately, Pennsylvanians were treated to a budget proposal that put the taxpayers right back into the fiscal hole they're attempting to dig out of. Governor Shapiro's budget address read more like a Powerball drawing, in which everyone wins $1 billion, rather than a serious and sustainable proposal that would move Pennsylvania in a positive direction. The spending proposed by the governor would immediately put the Commonwealth's budget into a structural deficit. This spending would come, of course, without the ability to print monopoly money to pay for it, like Washington lawmakers seem to think that they can do. Worse yet, the Rainy Day Fund, which props up our credit score and allows a cushion for said rainy day, would be eliminated as soon as the 2027 fiscal year. The $48.34 billion plan is a 6.2% increase over last year's final spend number. That budget was, of course, propped up and inflated with federal funds that had to be used or lost from the COVID era. Governor Shapiro clearly chose not to take that into account for the long-term sustainability of his plans, but rather decided to dip into the Commonwealth savings account to cover it in the short term. Given the grim outlook for Pennsylvania due to the governor's spending spree, the citizens of this Commonwealth could be looking at a roughly 46% increase in personal income tax. The Commonwealth's poor business and tax climate have already driven out so many young people to other states that we've lost both congressional seats and influence in Washington, D.C. Due to this budget scenario, we will have an entire generation running for the nearest exit for a better place to raise their families. Through our declining population, we'll ultimately have even less of a voice for the Keystone State in Washington and, of course, less resources in our own pockets. Pennsylvanians are asking for many things. Better tax rates to compete with neighboring states. Less burdensome barriers for small business and entrepreneurs. Better educational outcomes and, equally important, better choices to create opportunities for growth. And broader access to healthcare options. Unfortunately, the concerns of the people of Pennsylvania were not addressed in the governor's budget proposal. What Pennsylvania was offered was more of the same. Billions of dollars of more of the same. There's a better way. Had Harrisburg acted expeditiously many sessions ago to place taxpayer Bill of Rights-like guardrails on Harrisburg spending, Pennsylvania's fiscal outlook would look much different, for the better. Instead, Pennsylvanians continue to flee the Commonwealth for greener pastures, as they look to states like Florida, North Carolina, Tennessee, and South Carolina for the opportunity for their resources to go much further. Frustrated with the current fiscal environment, looking to scale your voice in the name of fiscal sanity? Join our movement for more. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to use your voice to fight back against reckless Harrisburg and Washington spending. Again, that's AmericansForProsperity.org. Use your voice to fight back against reckless Harrisburg and Washington spending. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers, including Thomas Homan, who was acting director of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency during the Trump administration, and State Senate Majority Leader Joe Pittman. The three-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest-running, this is the 35th year, of state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.